Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
We know what we think. What do you think? Call the fan, 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
Like call his wife and hey, 403 on this Wednesday morning. McMonagle here with you. I got you for another hour. Fliegelman back from London on the other side. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. We just ranted about that. Yeah, I mean, I'm still hung up on it. I couldn't believe it. I didn't know. I was literally just scrolling through Twitter and I saw the clip that Fliegelman played. Unbelievable. But that's not the lead of the show, although it should be. It should be the lead everywhere. The New York Yankees continue the momentum they have built, and the Mets cannot contain an ounce of momentum. Yankees pound the Royals. They continue to pitch great. They continue this offensive onslaught coming off what was the one stop of momentum, the 2 out of 3 loss to the Dodgers. They go right into Kansas City, take the first two games in completely different ways. They don't play Judge. They don't play Stanton. In game one, they beat him with small ball, score a couple runs, pitch a great game, and beat one of the best pitchers in all of the American League in Seth Lugo. Then game two, Judge and Stanton go deep. Wells hits a 3-run home run. They absolutely pound the Royals, score 10 runs. Another great pitching performance. The starting rotation's on an unbelievable, historic run. And they hit great pitching as Singer, another pitcher for the Royals at an ERA under 3, one of the best pitchers in the American League. They take care of him, and they continue to go about their business, beating good teams like the Royals. That's right, good teams. And beating good pitching like Glasnow, Seth Lugo, and Singer all 3 in a row. And right now, just nothing is stopping Aaron Judge. He's incredible. And the Yankees with what seems to be a healthy Juan Soto, despite the fact it's probably going to linger for a little bit, and he might get taken out of games for defensive replacement more often than typical. But right now, with a healthy team and are just a force in the American League, despite losing 2 out of 3 to the Dodgers without Juan Soto, and they continue to do what they do, and the Mets continue to do what they do, as they just can't build any momentum off winning that really great game in London with the come-from-behind victory and then the great double play with one, which is really one of the more heads-up, unique, and special defensive plays you could see from a catcher, particularly to end a game that felt like was going to be a colossal, disastrous loss. And they had won the 3 games against Washington. They go in and get a split in London. They came home to take on the lousy Miami Marlins, despite Lizardo being a good pitcher, and they just cannot figure out a way to get this offense going. Vientos is the only offense of the game. McGill gave them an average performance that kept them in the game, but defensively they can't make the play in center field. Vientos, although he's played much better defensively and made a great stop, can't make the throw to first base. They can't hold the lead. And this offense, Pete Alonso, particularly in this game, do absolutely nothing. And then they pinch hit Jeff McNeil. And guess what happened? He strikes out. I mean, this team, you got to come home and build some momentum and take care of the bad Marlins. You just have to. And yet they're incapable, and this offense is just awful. And then, of course, Aaron Rodgers wasn't at yesterday's mandatory day at camp. He had something important to do, and everybody lost their minds. And I don't know why. As I talked about it earlier, I think the Jets did exactly what they're supposed to do. I think you have to call it inexcused. How can you say it is? How do you set a precedent of, sure, he's not here, but it's fine. It's mandatory. He missed it. It's inexcused. It's unexcused. But that doesn't mean it's a big deal. This guy has been there every day for them. From the minute he uttered the words on Pat McAfee, I intend to play, and I intend to play for the Jets, he's done nothing but be all in. Sure, he does interviews, and he speaks his mind. But he's been at every single possible thing. I mean, he's been there for every voluntary day. He's been there. I mean, he's been all in with the Jets. He's now talking about multiple years with the Jets. He's defended the coach. He's defended the GM. He rushed his ass back to try and from injury to try and play, and then when he couldn't play, he still practiced. He put his arms around players, you know, who struggled, offensive linemen who just can't find their way, to the point where his mother is thanking Rodgers for being there for him. He's done everything. He immediately took that narrative of him not getting along with young players away, and was, you know, out there at Ranger games and Knick games with these young players. These guys can't say enough about him. He's done everything you could possibly do. He's all in to the nth degree, and he missed a game. He missed a day of practice in June for something he deemed important. It's the biggest non-story ever. You can talk about whether or not it's going to work. You can talk about his age. You can talk about whether he's going to be injured or not. You can talk about whether you like him personally, his views, whatever. You can't doubt that Rodgers has been all in. And the story coming out of Jets camp yesterday seems to be another LOL Jets day. And ultimately, what happened? A veteran Hall of Fame quarterback didn't show up to a practice in June, and a pass rusher who has only three players in the last 4 years have more sacks than him is looking for money. I mean, that's the NFL in a nutshell, and somehow it becomes a LOL Jets day. It's not. It's not. Those two things are extremely common, typical of an NFL season. Someone's holding out for money, and a veteran quarterback had something else to do one day in June. The guy practically missed every day in Green Bay. We've seen this before. It is not a big deal, particularly because they kept the offensive coordinator, and he knows the offense like the back of his hand. He's a football savant. He missed one day. No one cares. In 2 days, no one's going to care about this. We're going to go back to talking about how he throws no-look touchdown passes. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Danny and Belrose, what's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. Just want to make a funny comment. I don't know what.
Well, I mean, you hope it's funny. I mean, don't make assumptions here. I'll tell you if it's funny or not.
I'm pretty sure it's funny. Right, I don't know why I like to keep having that. The Yankees win or the Mets lose. LOL. But yeah. So let's get into the Yankees. So, a pretty good game, I have to say. You know, a couple of, you know, monster home runs. I don't know what's going on. You know, obviously, Rizzo, I think, like I've been saying for the past, you know, couple calls, he needs to go. You know, the guy went 0-for-5, and I really hope they shop him, you know, during the trade day.
Yeah, I actually thought it was a good day for him, believe it or not. I know he missed a double down the left field line by 6 inches. The double play ball, he did hit hard. And believe me, this is looking for reasons of seeing any improvement, and he had his best defensive game of the season by a mile. I mean, he had that inning where he makes the over-the-shoulder catch, he makes a good play on a ground ball, and then gets a scoop at the end of the inning. He had an inning where he made three very nice defensive plays in a row. So I actually thought it was a positive day for Rizzo, but you're right. He's a major problem. They're going to have to need, they're going to monitor. I think they're going to give him days off a lot more frequently than they have. And without question, come the trade deadline, a corner infielder is no longer something that, if it falls into our lap, if it makes perfect sense, if it, you know, now it's they're out looking for a corner infielder.
Yeah, I was actually reading something the other day that Ryan McMahon would be a good addition.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he would be. He's a very good third baseman. He's played well for the Rockies, but. As I was listening to Ken Rosenthal too, the Rockies are weird, and they've done things that don't make sense for rebuilding teams, like Chris Bryant and different things. And the idea that they would part with him isn't a no-brainer that we will look at, like teams like the A's or maybe the Angels. The Rockies are a little weird. So I know they've traded the big superstar with the big contract. That is not McMahon necessarily. So we'd have to see if that makes sense. I've also, I'll give him a pop. There's a guy on Twitter, Bobby Malone, who does great stuff does good Yankee content. And he brought up a name that I've liked too. Rengifo of the Angels. I like him. He gives you a good at bat. He's a solid guy. He's hitting 300 this year. He's having a good year. The Angels are terrible. I don't think you're going to get, I'd be very surprised if the Yankees are going to get an all-star caliber player. They're not going to make a big-time trade. They're going to look to improve a little bit. And right now, it's not very hard to improve from Anthony Rizzo. So, I mean, I think some of these names we're talking about make a little bit of sense. I wouldn't expect, like, a Goldschmidt. I wouldn't expect the Cardinals. I wouldn't expect a big-time deal for, like, a Arenado or anything like that. I think you're looking at minor upgrades.
Yeah, they throw in a couple of prospects with Rizzo. I think they get something decent, you know.
Not with Rizzo. Rizzo's going nowhere. They're not going to trade Rizzo.
Yeah, I wish they would.
They're not going to. He's Judge's best friend. He's going to be on the team. They're gonna have a platoon situation. He'll be a bench player. He'll be a lefty guy who comes off the bench. Like I think that's, and they'll probably get the level of first baseman where in the right situation you could play Rizzo instead of him. Like I really don't think you're going to get like a great, great player. You're going to get an upgrade where Rizzo is still going to be involved in the team. They're not going to jettison their one of their team leaders. One of their perceived, veteran guys, won a world championship before, knows how to do it, and Judge's best friend. I promise he might not play, but I doubt very much he'll be traded or moved.
Yeah, but definitely after this year, he'll be gone.
No question. This is last year as a New York Yankee. There's no question. I think it's the same for Gleyber Torres.
And the Giants, Dan Jones, I'm hoping he's healthy this year.
Yeah.
He's not really participating in drills right now, but we got Drew Lock just in case, and I hope Neighbors is a big pickup for him. I know he looked good in college, but we'll see what happens.
If you know me, while I agree with everything you said, that I hope he stays healthy, I hope he's great. I hope I'm wrong. I no longer have faith in Daniel Jones. He's injury prone, and he's not that good. He's solid. He's just not very good. He's not worth the money he's getting paid. Well, that's the going rate for a quarterback. Yeah, not one that misses all this time and doesn't throw touchdown passes. It's not. But, okay. I understand you're going to get a quarterback. That's what you got to pay him. But I don't deem him to be worthy of the contract. He gets injured all the time. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he has a great year. And Neighbors can go along with the list of all the other things. He needs a pass-catching tight end. He needs an offensive lineman. He needs this. He needs that. Well, he had Saquon Barkley. They got him Andrew Thomas. Then they got him Waller. I know he was bad. Kenny Golladay. Like, these are all the things they need, and it never works out. And I'm not saying Kenny Golladay or Waller are his fault, but I'm just saying we've heard this over. And I hope Malik Neighbors is fantastic. But the premature, he's the greatest thing we've ever seen coming out of camp. Let me see it. I understand he probably jumps off the page. You know why? Because they've had the worst group of wide receivers in the history of the NFL over the last handful of years. I'm sure for the Stapletons and Jordan Renans of the world, who I respect and love reading their stuff, I'm sure it's like, oh my God, look at this, a wide receiver who can actually get open and make a catch. It must be novel to them. But I'm not ready to just anoint the Giants anything, and we'll see with the defense, new defensive coordinator. Obviously, they went out and got a legitimate pass rusher to go with Kayvon Thibodeau here, so hopefully you could actually... a new defensive coordinator who might actually use Thibodeau to try and get after the quarterback. What a great idea! But we'll see. I have to see it before I believe it. I have to see it before I believe it. And speak of the devil, look who calls. Talk about the Giants. Here comes Brett in Long Island. What's up, Brett?
Chris, did I hear you say that one of your boys roots for the Eagles?
One of my sons, his football team right now is the Eagles for Mighty Might. So you got the unfortunate nature of the Eagles. And I wouldn't say he roots for the Eagles. I would say the one playoff game that I made him watch a couple years ago, he was still in the mode of someone's got to win and someone's got to lose. Daddy's rooting for the Giants. I'll root for the Eagles. So that did happen, yes.
Chris, shame on you, man. Shame on you. And this is the problem with our sports society. Why there's Chiefs fans, Cowboys fans, Eagles fans. Everybody out there, listen to me carefully.
Oh, yeah,
whoever
please.
Has kids that are under 6 years old, that live in New York, New Jersey, they better be Jets or Giants fans. I have a 3-year-old daughter, a 5-year-old son.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we started out watching football. I want the green team. I want this team. I want that team. I said, we want the blue team, or whatever they are. I said, and then it became... We like the Giants, right? The signs out front, wearing the Giants jerseys, right? But they're still young. But everybody listen to me. This is how you mold them. Was there a little resistance at 4 by my son? When he's like, oh, I like the Giants. I like the Eagles. I stared at him. That's there. I said, do you want a dinosaur toy? He said, yes. I said, you like the Giants.
Yeah, I really don't want to hear you scold everybody and tell people how to parent. I'd rather not. Shame on me because I allowed my son to root for the Eagles one day. He's 6 years old. I bought him a Volpe jersey. He has a Patrick Mahomes jersey. He likes what he likes. I'm not going to force my son into anything. I'm not going to take things away from him. I'm not going to threaten him. You want to threaten your kids? Go ahead. It's fine. I understand the thought. I do it. You know, I threaten to take away things. Sure. It's not on what fan you're going to be. It's on, I expect, a good grade on your math test. But do you, Brett? That's fine. I understand. He's six. He doesn't root for anybody. He turns on the TV and likes the team that's winning. That's where he is right now. He loves playing the sports. He hasn't really found a fandom just yet. It's not like he sits around and watches the Eagles every Sunday. We turned on the playoff game. He wanted to root against Dad. He wanted to have that dynamic of me rooting for one thing, him rooting for another. So that's the day we had there. He does not. He has an Eagles jersey because he plays for the Eagles. Should I tell him, shame on me? Should I go to the league and say my son only plays for the Giants? Sorry, he can't have anything Eagle because I'm a Giants fan? You can call me up and yell at me about Daniel Jones. Don't tell me how to raise my kids. Thank you. Kevin in Clifton Park. What's up, Kevin?
Hi, Chris. That's a great Beatles song you played coming out of the break.
Yes, it is.
Sergeant Pepper.
Yes, it is. I love Good Morning. I love Good Morning. It's a great, every song on the Sergeant Pepper is great. But yes, I love Good Morning. Always have.
Awesome. So I do have one time, the one time that I'm aware of, and it was warranted, that the Yankee fans cheered the opposing pitcher as he won his 300th game. In 1985, and it was Tom Seaver as a Chicago White Sox.
Okay, Tom Seaver won his 300th game as a White Sox at Yankee Stadium. I do remember that. I've seen the videos in those horrendous White Sox uniforms. But they cheered him?
Oh, yeah, that was... Yeah, you could see it on YouTube. I mean, it was Tom Seaver. I know he played for the Mets, but he's still a New York guy.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get that. It's a little, at the end of the game, it's one thing as he wins and it's over.
Right.
I don't remember where the Yankees were in the standings, what the day was. What was it, later in the season, earlier in the season?
I got to look it up. I was at the Saratoga racetrack, so it had to be in August.
Okay, that's a good point. All right, listen, it's before my time. I'm going to give the Yankee fans the benefit of the doubt on that one. A crowning achievement like that, again, a golf clap, that's fine. But as someone's walking off the field of a no-nothing, you're talking about a 300th win. I mean, it's a different thing. That cements you as a Hall of Fame pitcher, that moment. And a little bit of a clap or applaud for that at the end of the game. Okay, the game is over. We're no longer competing. Fine, on some level. In the middle of a game that you're tied 0-0, that this guy has shut you down, and if you lose this game, you're going to be in last place, and applaud him as he walks off the field of really a meaningless, and it's not like any sort of major accomplishment other than he pitched a hell of a game. I'm sorry, I find it absolutely ridiculous. John in Maspeth, what's up, John?
Yeah, see, man, that caller that just says something about your kids, like, you know, saying shame, and they like the, you know, shame that they like the Eagles and all.
Yeah.
Listen, that caller's got to get lost, man.
I agree.
Get lost.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Brett likes to poke
my
the bear
daughter,
a little bit, but my kids are, you know, let's not go there.
My daughter's 9 years old, and for the first 6 years of her life or whatever, 6-7 years of her life, she hated the Yankees. She was rooting for every team that was playing the Yankees.
Right.
And then when Aaron Judge had that home run record and she saw how much I was into it, how emotionally invested I was into it, you know what? When that happened, she goes, Daddy, I want to go to a Yankee game. I want to go.
Right.
You know what I did? I brought her to about 6 games, you
of
know?
Of course.
And
Listen,
she loved it.
Of course.
She loved it, and now she's a diehard Yankee fan. She sits there and watches every game with me. She knows all the players. She knows all the pitchers. She knows what the bullpen's like, the starting rotation's like.
Yeah.
She even started playing softball herself. So you know what? You know, your kids might like the teams now, but there's always room for change, man, you know, especially when they're young.
Of course. He's 6 years old, and like I said, he turns on the video games because he plays the video games and he likes the star players. I think I said it on Friday. He's all over the place. Like, I mean, that's just where he is right now. He loves playing the games. He loves playing baseball. He loves the video games. He's getting all the stars. Like, he was into jerseys. He wanted jerseys for his birthday. I asked him, I asked him what jerseys you want for your birthday. And he comes back with, I kid you not, the two names he gave me. He's sitting there and he's thinking about it. And I said, come on, Tommy, give me two jerseys. I know he wanted, and here's another one for you. I knew we'd already got him. He wanted a LeBron James jersey because he wanted a Laker jersey because the entire neighborhood, all the schools, elementary school, middle school, and high school, are all purple and gold. That's the color of Warwick School District or whatever. All the teams are purple and gold. So he wanted a purple and gold jersey because the kids wear the Warwick stuff. He wanted purple and gold. He wants purple and gold sneakers as well. But he wants a LeBron James jersey. So we're going to get it. We got him a love. It's still coming. It took forever to get here. But he's got a LeBron James jersey. So any other jerseys you want? He looks at me. I'm not kidding. And he says, I want a Max Muncy jersey and Bob Cousy. I'm like, Bob Cousy? Who are you? I'm like, Bob Cousy, the basketball player from the 50s and 60s, Bob Cousy? Where did you even hear that name, Bob Cousy? So, yeah, I mean, Brett, maybe I should threaten my kid not to be a Bob Cousy fan. He's six! He just turned 7 yesterday. Happy birthday, Tommy. So he's 7! He wants a Max Muncy jersey because the last time he played a video game, Max Muncy hit a grand slam for him. I'm not gonna threaten that out of him. I don't care. He's 6. We're going to go to Yankee games. Eventually, I'm hoping he'll have that dynamic. But you know what? I had a brother who went against my father, who was a Met fan because my dad was a Yankee fan, or was this fan. I mean, it's not a big deal. And like I said, he doesn't sit around. Not that I have to justify any of this to you. But he doesn't sit around rooting for the Eagles. One game we sat there, and I've told the story because it broke my heart. It made me laugh and be like, can't you just sit here and want to root with me? No, he wanted to root against me. He wanted, ha-ha, Daddy, your team stinks. That's what he wanted. He was 5. Bob Cousy. How do you find a Bob Cousy jersey? Shame on me for considering it. Bob Cousy. Can you believe that? And he wanted to watch the Bill Russell documentary with me. He's all over the place. He likes, you know, he's constantly asking me how many championships the Celtics and the Lakers fans. He's 5, 6, 7 years old, and he's fascinated on the best and the greatest. So when he was watching the Eagles kick the crap out of the Giants, instead of going, oh, my team stinks, he went, ha-ha, I'm rooting for the Eagles today, and you stink, Daddy. That's what I got. Hopefully things will change. And he turns on the Super Bowl, and Patrick Mahomes wins the Super Bowl, so he likes the Chiefs. Hopefully he'll grow out of it. And if not, then I got a Kansas City Chief fan on my hands. But you know what? Eventually Patrick Mahomes will no longer be there, and he'll go through misery like us all. He can't avoid it. He could pick the Chiefs. He could pick the Eagles. He could pick whoever he wants. He is going to experience misery. He will.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first 3 grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Chargers and the New York Giants have exchanged their draft picks.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Eli Manning and Philip Rivers.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Ooh-wee. 431, McMonagle here with you. Another half hour taking your phone calls, 888-808-1019. Got you till the warm-up show at 5. Let's get back to those calls. And, I mean, fandom has kind of come up here in the last hour or so, whether it be kids or St. Louis, because I'm just flabbergasted. I got someone tweeting at me that, you know, it's the phenom thing. As obviously Paul Skeens has done an incredible job as a young rookie coming up, I still, Luis Gil's been just as good. I mean, I know we've seen him before, but I believe he still has his rookie status. I think he's going to, you know, so I can't imagine him walking off the mound at Fenway to applause, but okay. I do understand there's been phenoms before, whether it's, I mean, people got swept up in Fernando mania, and but I still don't. I just can't imagine. I can't imagine having an opposing pitcher throw six and a third shutout innings and then give him a standing ovation as he walks off the mound after just thoroughly kicking my ass. Like, I just can't imagine that. There's respect, of course. It's respect, but it's brewed in hate. But then what the hell do I know? I let my kid cheer for the Eagles one day. Pete in Trenton. What's up, Pete?
Hey, how's it going, Chris?
Good. How are you, buddy?
How's everything? I just heard that one caller call up about Tom Seaver getting cheered off the mound in Yankee Stadium.
Yes.
That was he had 299 wins that day. It was Phil Rizzuto day, but half the crowd was Mets fans.
You know, that's a good point, because it depends. What year was it? Depending on where they were.
1985. The Yankees were in second place, but they were trailing by like seven or eight games at the time. But I just remember him when he got the last out. The whole stadium was giving him a standing ovation, which most of the fans were Mets fans, and amazing. It was crazy because it was Phil Rizzuto day.
Really?
Huh. And
crowning career achievement is different than a somewhat random day in June, where, I mean, that's not a significant moment. Yeah, that's going to be one of a million walking off the mounds for Paul Skeens. Like, that's not a huge deal for him. The Tom Seaver, it's the culmination of a life's work. Like, it's just a little different. But I don't know if I would give a standing ovation. It is different to me than what happened last night in St. Louis. Peter in Manhattan. What's up, Pete?
How you doing, Chris? Happy birthday to your boy.
Happy.
I was going to call you last week at night, and then you ended up doing the day show. But anyway, just quickly, Mark Fidrich, another back in the 70s.
Yes.
He played for Detroit. He never made, I mean, he's a guy that just talked to the ball. That was pretty funny.
Sure.
But he got injured. You know what I wanted to ask you, Chris? I was just curious. I mean, you take a look at Barry Bonds.
Yes.
You know, he had Kent before him protecting him. But, you know, he walked 200 times a year.
Yes.
Why are pitchers pitching to Judge? I mean, that, you know, to me, it's a mystery. I mean, I would expect Judge to be walking, you know, at least once a game. So that's my question. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. I think you're going to start to see more of it. I really do. I mean, because I agree with you. I've been saying it for the last couple days. He's the best hitter It's getting to the point where he's the best hitter I've seen since Barry Bonds in the early 2000s. That's how good he is. That's how good he is right now. I mean, if you look at his numbers, he's hitting 309, 25 home runs. on OPS through the roof, and he was awful in April. He is on a tear, the likes of which are hardly ever seen. I mean, he hits, it's just, it's incredible what he's doing. And he's, for me right now, we are seeing, and I don't know if it'll continue all year. If it does, it'll be amazing. But right now, he's played a month of the best baseball we've seen since Barry Bonds. And eventually, I think you are going to see somewhat of a Barry Bonds treatment. And because, yeah, I mean, Soto's in front of him, and if Soto's on base, you don't want to put two guys on, but it's going to get to the point where it's like, all right, Stanton, you got to beat me. All right, well, certainly Rizzo, who hopefully wouldn't hit there anymore, but Rizzo, you would certainly have to beat me. But Stanton, Torres, Verdugo, whoever it's going to be, at some point, you're just going to challenge these guys, because how could I pitch the Judge in any kind of spot at all? Because right now, he's just tearing the cover off the ball anytime he sees a strike. So I don't know if he'll get, I mean, Bonds had like 120 intentional walks in 2004. He had like 600 plate appearances and 300 at bats. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy. I don't think we'll get to that level with it. But because he was hitting 360 and hitting 70 home runs. I mean, it's not quite there with Judge, but it's going to get to the point where, yeah, you're going to see him pitched around a lot more. And that will beg the question, because I know where it leads. It leads to, well, then do you flip Soto and Judge? Well, you put Judge in front of Soto, so at least you have someone who you know is a great hitter behind Judge to really make a starting pitcher or a pitcher think about walking Judge. I think it might get to the point where even that won't matter. I know that sounds crazy, but he's that freaking good. He's that good. And Soto could beat you with a double, a single. He can beat you with the home run, but it's not like Judge. Patrick in Jersey City, what's up, Pat?
Chris, what up, man? How you doing? Thanks for talking to me.
Oh, of course, man. Thank you for making the phone call in this early morning.
I just wanted to give a little credit to Boone for pulling Stroman with the bases loaded to get that third out.
Yeah, wait. I'm sorry. I'm completely befuddled here for a second. Did you say you want to give credit to Boone?
Right, because nobody ever calls when he does something good.
That's why I'm still not believing that you're actually there. Patrick, are you real or are you a figment of my imagination?
I'm in the same boat as you. I'm a Boone defender and a Cashman defender.
Oh, it's me. I'm surprised we never ran into each other at the annual party. There's only like six of us. Were you the tall guy wearing the tuxedo T-shirt?
Yeah, far from tall, but was me wearing a tuxedo T-shirt.
What do you call it?
Glaber made a phenomenal throw in the seventh. It was a tough ground ball, and he made an absolutely perfect throw.
Yes.
And nobody ever talks about him unless he does something bad in the field.
No. Well, I mean, I do think the two are different. I appreciate the call, Patrick. Glaber makes easy mistakes, man, where he loses his head and he just doesn't show interest. And that's how it's perceived. I know he's a slick player, like Carlos Beltran, like Robinson Cano, where he's so smooth that when the mistakes are made, it looks like he's disinterested or doesn't care or takes it for granted, as BT said this morning. And he's not wrong. I mean, he makes the boneheaded play at some real inopportune times. There's no doubt about it. But there is no question he's capable of the great play. I think he's a very good defensive second baseman. I do. He's prone to these blunders, both on the base path and on the field. And he's not the hitter we all hoped he would be. He's not the hitter he was in 2018 and 19. He's just not. He hasn't been that guy. Even last year, where you could argue he was their best hitter all around because Judge missed so much time, that he was their best hitter last year. He had a great year last year. And I still think he can be that guy, but like I understand why people aren't going to praise Glaber for the great play, even though he can make them. There's no doubt about it. He has a strong arm. He's got good range. I think he's an excellent second baseman when he wants to be. But there are times you can't drop a pop-up. Can't blow a double play ball. I mean, you just can't make the mistakes he makes sometimes. This is Major League Baseball. You're supposed to make some of the great plays, and you're always supposed to make the easy ones. And Glaber will drop an easy one. And then he makes mistakes on the base path, too. It's just, it's hard to call him a winning player. One, they haven't won with him, but he's not alone in that boat. And he just makes these plays. It's hard to call him a winning player, and I think it's going to be the last year with the Yankees. But Boone, I think Boone's a hell of a lot easier to defend. They've won a lot of games. He is now seventh all time on the Yankee list for victories. And I joke and quip all the time. People hate Boone and hate Cashman. You can't have it both ways and say both have done terrible jobs. Well, they've won too many games for both to do a terrible job. Either Brian Cashman put a terrible team on the field and Aaron Boone did a hell of a job to get it to 95 to 100 wins every year, or Brian Cashman put together a great team that any dope could win 100 games with. It's one or the other. They've won too many games to say both Cashman and Boone are terrible at their jobs. I think they're both pretty good at their jobs. Over the last handful of years, Cashman's made a ton of mistakes. I think Boone does a pretty good job. Everyone makes mistakes, but ultimately, nobody wants to give him credit for moving Verdugo to cleanup, change the lineup. Right? The story of Grisham and that home run, nobody mentions the fact that the fan base was livid that he was hitting in that spot in the lineup, and it came through. I mean, this bullpen, time after time, everybody tells me he has no feel for the game. He's terrible with the bullpen. He just doesn't know what he's doing. And yet, we glorify Matt Blake for turning nobodies into good starting pitching. I mean, good bullpen relievers and good bullpen arms. Well, they've also been utilized in a position where they have this lowest ERA and everybody's successful. It's not like he's putting them in positions not to be successful. We point to the one or two times where a reliever will give up a run across the game, which happens to every team across baseball, to every manager from Bruce Bochy to Terry Francona to Buck Showalter to Aaron Boone. Across the league, they all put in relievers who blow games. But if the Yankees lose, Aaron Boone's the reason. And if they win, Aaron Boone's lucky to have such a good team that won the game. That's how it's been for Aaron Boone. And he's quietly gone about being the seventh most winning manager in Yankee history, despite winning a championship. And yes, nobody else on that list is ringless. So he's got one more hill to climb, baby!
Add WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
Mm-hmm. All right, 448, McBonagle here with you. You know, speaking about being a good sport, I saw this video yesterday. I didn't get a chance to talk about it. This John Kelly Jr., the running back from the Cleveland Browns. Fleeks, did you see this video by any chance playing a softball game?
Sorry, well, I was on the phone.
I'm sorry. John Kelly Jr., the running back from Cleveland in the softball game he was in?
No.
All right, so he's in some sort of...
Was this the David Njoku softball game?
I really don't... I should have looked into it more. I just saw it again. The video is unbelievable. I don't know what the softball game is, but it's obviously clearly some other teammates or something along the lines where it's a charity. It looks like a charity thing. So they have this elderly woman at the plate, right? So she's hitting. And John Kelly, the running back for Cleveland, is playing first base. They pitch to her. She hits it back to the pitcher. They throw it to him at first base, but he doesn't step on the base. It looks like he's going to let her get to first base and get a single and give a nice moment, you know, for this older woman. And he just stands right next to the base until she walks and she could barely move. She's walking all the way down first base until she gets to within a step of the bag. And then he steps on first and celebrates and tells her she's out of here and goes and celebrates with his team. I've never seen anything like it. I don't know. It makes me think it's a gag that it was like set up. But, like, he waits for her to run all the way down to first base. And then just before she gets to the bag, he steps on it and celebrates. And celebrates.
I'm watching it now. It's taking forever as she's being escorted down the first base line.
Yeah, she's being escorted down the first base line. She can barely move. I mean, she's clearly quite elderly. And then at the last second, he steps on the bag and celebrates. I've never seen anything like it. That cracked me up. I just saw that video yesterday. That made me laugh.
And at least the crowd knew to boo.
Right. The crowd, if it was in St. Louis, they'd applaud him. Thanks for at least giving her an opportunity.
I mean, that has to be the most she's traveled in who knows how long and she's out.
Just that's the thing. I mean,
she wouldn't have made it around the bases. Either, it's better off.
Well, either give her the base or call her out immediately. Don't make her walk all the way there. Either just step on first and have her just, you know, peel off a quarter of the way to the baseline and save her all the struggle. He lets her get all the way down the line and then steps on the bag.
Who knows? Maybe he saved her life.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Well, I mean,
she's not making it to third, let alone home plate.
I mean, for a kid, it's one thing to do it to a kid and have a little fun with a kid. I don't know about an elderly woman.
I would love to know, like, what's her reaction? Because you see the guy is scoring her. He turns around. He's like, oh, like,
he's giving
maybe
everybody
annoyed.
The thumbs down. He's like, yeah, boo this man. I don't know. I've never seen anything like it, though. That was great. Philip in Jamaica, Queens. What's up, Phil?
Hello. Thank you. Taking my call. By the way, I love the music you play to start your show. You're a great singer.
Oh, thank you. I have a little fun. I like to sing.
I want to talk about the Yankees and Aaron Boone.
Sure.
In particular.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with the previous caller. I think he does an unbelievable job. There are years when the Yankees lose stars and they had to replace him. Remember the year where they replaced him with Tuchman and Maben?
Yeah, he should have won Manager of the Year, 2019. Yeah. There's no doubt. He won 100-plus games with Mike Tuchman, Gio Urshela, Luke Voit, Cameron Maben. Exactly. You're right. Everyone stepped in. They lost Judge. They lost Stan for almost the whole year. They lost they lost Andujar at third base like a week into the year with a shoulder injury. Like they were dropping like flies that year, and they still won 100-plus games.
Yeah, exactly. But if I'm going to put the blame on the Yankees, I am going to put it on Cashman because he gets some, like, he puts Boone in the offense. He has to play players like Donaldson and Stanton. So he puts Boone in an awkward position because they have to pay them. But then a player who's younger, who's more talented, can't play like Cabrera and LeMahieu. I personally think they should play Cabrera more than LeMahieu, because Cabrera is younger and LeMahieu is getting older, so his skills are diminishing.
Yeah, I agree with some of the things you said there. I don't agree with your last point. I still want to play LeMahieu. I don't know. Oswaldo Cabrera he's a nice little player. And he had a great start to the year and helped them win while Judge was struggling, no doubt. And I'm not opposed to giving him some more playing time, but no, I want to see what DJ LeMahieu could still be. DJ LeMahieu is a 2-time batting champion. I know he's getting older, but again, last year he had an 800 OPS. I want to see. I don't think Oswaldo Cabrera can give you an 800 OPS. I don't think he has it in him. Where I still think DJ LeMahieu can be the machine on close to it, at least close to it. I'm not ready to do that. But you're 100% right about your Cashman point. The reason the Yankees have not won a World Series in the last 5 or 6 years is so much more because of Brian Cashman than it is because of Aaron Boone. It's not even worth discussing. Last year's roster sucked. I'm amazed they won 82 games without Judge. I mean, he's been the failure of the Baby Bombers, which I guess on some level is development, and you can put that on the hands of Aaron Boone at some level. I don't think so. But it's much more of a Brian Cashman issue. It's been much more the roster than it has been the coach and when he brings in the bullpen or, you know, the attitude he's given the team. And by the way, Aaron Boone's still adjusting because I'm telling you right now, watching this team, they're managing differently. That was the first game Judge had off, the first game of this Royal Series. That's the first time they gave him off. They've DH'd him a lot to get him off his feet and not play center field. But, I mean, Judge consistently gets days off, consistently, in previous years. And they have bench players who don't play. They've had such more sense of urgency than they had before. And you want to put it on Juan Soto and his we play every day mentality and we attack every pitch as its own personal battle. Okay, I'm open to that. But Aaron Boone's made clear changes. And Judge said it at the end of last year that he wanted more urgency at the start of the year and playing everybody and they've responded. And you know, for a team that went into the offseason and a fan base who demand change and didn't really get it. And we heard about this audit they were going to have from this, you know, analytic company, and that really turned out to be nothing. And clearly, they didn't make any changes at the manager or GM. And we were like, oh, great. Yeah, all the changes you're going to make. Juan Soto's the only change. There have been subtle changes on how they go about business day to day. There have been. There absolutely have been. They play everybody. And then you know what else? I think you could learn a lot from the first game of this Royal Series. Because last year, when they played the punt lineup, as so many Yankee fans like to dub it, when they played that secondary lineup, when they took out Judge or Stanton or both or whomever, and it was the depths of the roster playing a game, which they did much more than they have so far this year, they didn't change their style of play. They just hit. They just tried to hit three-run home runs, and they hoped Franchy Cordero would do it, or they hoped Bowers would do it, or they hoped IKF would come through with a double in the gap, or like they didn't try and do different things. And what you saw yesterday, and we all laughed, myself included, at Hal Steinbrenner when he told you about an emphasis on bunting, and we laughed, and we still should have. It was a dumb thing to say. But the secondary lineup the other day played as if it were a secondary lineup, and they played to their personal strengths. And they laid down bunts, and they tried to steal bases, and they played quote-unquote small ball as opposed to waiting for Trevino to hit a 3-0 home run when he's not going to. They played a different brand of baseball than they will when the lineup is full and intact and has Judge and Soto in the middle of it and Stanton hitting home runs. That's what I like to see. If you're going to give me that lineup, then act like it's that lineup and attack the game in that manner. And that's what they did. And they gave you a good performance. They scored 4 runs. It's not a boatload of runs, but it's enough to win. And it was a good enough offensive performance along with this run of starting pitching, whether it's Carlos Rodon, whether it's obviously Luis Gil, whether it's Marcus Stroman. I mean, they've just, every game the pitcher goes 5-6 innings. They give more depth than any team in baseball. And remember the narrative of the bullpen? Oh, the bullpen will be worn out by the end of the year. Aaron Boone loves to go to his pen. They're going to be worn out by the end of the year. Well, I mean, they have a starting pitching rotation that goes through more innings than any other staff in baseball, and historically more than any other staff in the history of baseball. I mean, those guys would go longer than 6 or 7, but they've had a run without going less than 4, should I say. I mean, they're giving you innings every single night. I think the rotation has been wildly underappreciated. I know we talk about it, and Luis Gil's a story every time he comes pitches on a fifth day. But we talk about Judge, we talk about Soto, and we talk about this lineup because it's been the detriment of the team over the last handful of years, and that's what we focus on. But right now, as good as the offense has been, as great as Soto's addition has been, and as much as Judge's Barry Bonds circa 2002 to 2004, it doesn't change the fact that this rotation, night in and night out, is giving you excellent starting rotation, starting pitching. Excellent. Every night. Without Gerrit Cole. It's been the biggest surprise for me. Because we all went into the season thinking it would be the team's weakness. We went into the year thinking this would be the team's weakness. And instead it's the strength. And for the Mets, if you want to just like plain brass tacks, as simple as I can make it, just, you know, black and white. The New York Yankees had a weakness in the starting pitching. It's been their biggest strength. The Mets had a perceived strength, which was going to be their offense, and it's been their biggest weakness. And that's why one team is winning and why the other one can't find momentum. Plain and simple. Your strength has got to be your strength, or you're going to have a weakness not be a weakness. And for the Mets, that their biggest strength is their offense, and they can't find it. And it's certainly not pinch hitting Jeff McNeil in the seventh inning. Well, that's it for me. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. Fliegelman, we got to get to your London trip tomorrow. I don't know. I forgot all about you. I apologize. But we will do that tomorrow, 2 a.m. on a Thursday morning. Up next is the warm-up show. I'll catch you guys all then. Enjoy the rest of your day. Have a glorious day. And let your children root for whom they wish. That's the message of the day. I'll catch you tomorrow at 2 a.m. Everybody, I'm out of here. Enjoy the day. Warm-up show is next.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFAN.